Carmen Policy joins us on Sports Byline. He's been with me many times before because I respect him for his insight into sports, particularly the National Football League, and he certainly has portfolio because he was the president of the 49ers for 7 years, also former president and CEO of the Cleveland Browns, part owner of that team as well. And what I wanted to talk to Carmen about is what's happening with fans around the country. It doesn't matter whether it's the NFL, baseball, even basketball. We know about the brawl in Detroit. We know what happened down in Los Angeles with a 49ers fan when he was attacked by a Dodgers fan. And there's problems almost in any ballpark, whether it be NFL or baseball, that you go into. Now, Carmen, you were in Cleveland as part owner and president and CEO of the Cleveland Browns. And when they built that new stadium there, you told me, given the problems that they had in the stadium, particularly in the dog pound, you had a kennel in the basement, which was a cells, was it not?
You know, you're absolutely right. We really studied and worked and were dedicated to the proposition that the new dog pound was going to be an experience, but it was not going to be a horrific experience from a security and from a conduct standpoint the way it was before. And in an effort to make sure that fans knew we were serious, we not only created a new dog pound with a new layout, a new manner of getting into and out of the particular section of the stadium, but we created holding cells, and we called them the kennels. And there were cells down below where you couldn't see any of the game. There was no TV where you could sit there behind the bars and watch. Where the if you really, really deserved to be locked up, the police threw you in there and you sat there till the game was over. And then depending upon how you acted and depending upon what you'd done, they would decide whether or not actual charges would be brought.
The Brown Stadium was not an exception. If you take a look at Philadelphia, it was also reported that they had jail cells there as well. What is it about fan deportment and what they're doing at games that forced you and other stadiums to do things like that?
Well, I honestly think that there are times with especially aggressive sports like football, perhaps even hockey, where the nature of the game with its aggressiveness and its violence pours over into the psyche of the fan, and when that is also fueled by some alcohol, it just creates a situation that becomes cavemanish, and it's got to be controlled. And it's not only got to be controlled, but it's got to be controlled quickly. So we recognize that in Cleveland, and we were really flying high. We really felt really good about our success there. And the dog pound, the new dog pound, literally was transformed into a place where, yes, it's going to be an experience, and it's not exactly the family section, but, you know, 20-something-year-old girls could go there and with their boyfriends, and everything would be fine. And it was coming around very well. You may recall we had an incident in Cleveland in 2001, I believe it was, where the officials really blew a call during one of our games that had playoff ramifications. They stopped the play of the game. They let the fans steam in terms of what was going on, and then they tried to proceed with the really bad call that was made, and all of a sudden, all hell broke loose. This was when the league first started permitting plastic beer bottles to be sold in the stadium. I don't know if you recall that, Ron.
Yes, I do.
And a few guys, and it didn't take many, a few guys started picking up these beer bottles and throwing them. They picked them up from the floor. Some of them even urinated in a beer bottle and threw them. And it was so ugly and embarrassing. And, yes, it was about, I don't know, I guess we'd say about 40, maybe even 50 people. That's a lot of people, but still, that's 40 or 50 thugs. And it was so horrendous. They stopped the game. We had to clear the field. We wound up going back on the field, eventually completing the game. We lost the game, and it was such a black eye for Cleveland. It was, and we then took immediate action again. We did all the work we had to do with film. We tried tracking down the offenders. We got the local newspaper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, to help us publicize what film we had. And it became a major effort to prosecute those who were involved. And that, again, helped straighten things out.
There were a couple of other ugly incidents, just to show that it's not Cleveland, it's not just San Francisco. But if you remember correctly, the official that was hit with the liquor bottle, and if my memory serves me correctly, it might have been up in Minnesota. And then you had the incident at the stadium in New York where people were throwing ice balls out of the second deck. And that hit a couple of the players and people along the sideline as well. So this seems to be a general population fan mindset. You grew up in Ohio. You grew up as a kid. Where did we cross the line as fans to go from enjoying the game to becoming an aggressive part of the game?
Well, I think at some point in time we did cross the line. I think you're right. Because I just don't believe it was all that bad, you know, when people were going to the game to see the game. I think something happened and people started going to the game for different reasons. And I think all of a sudden people saw this as an opportunity to get out and act up. It was not so much I'm going to the football game, it's there's an event going on, and oh, by the way, it's not a rock concert, it just happens to be a football game. I'm going to probably take myself to the limit in terms of sobriety, and I'm just going to, you know, act up. And we've seen more and more of it, because I think more and more people are going to these sporting events for the wrong reason. And they're not really fans. They're not really there to see the game. They're there to exhibit the kind of conduct that they're exhibiting, because there's just not an opportunity for them to exhibit that conduct in normal everyday life.
I know that the San Francisco police chief, when he was talking about the incident that happened in San Francisco, said, I don't know what percentage of it is the 49er fans, what percentage is the Oakland Raider fans, but I know 100% of it is liquor. And that seems to be the trigger point, the fueling point for a lot of the problems. A, do you believe that it is? And two, if indeed it is, doesn't the NFL have to step in and do something more aggressive about it?
Well, I think when you say step in and be more aggressive, I can't probably argue with that. So what you're saying is let's stay on top of things, and when we see people are getting out of line, then we have to step in and stop them from crossing, as you put it, as you said from the very beginning, crossing over the line.
Well, actually, what I mean by that, Carmen, is the fact that, and I know we're talking about finance here and money here, and it always comes down to money, but I mean, how important is it to have liquor, meaning beer in this particular case, sold at games? Because all that does is fuel somebody who has already been drinking, a lot of people have been drinking at tailgate parties out in the parking lot.
Well, I think again, it all relates to the problem is with the people who don't know how to control themselves. I mean, the abolitionists were not abolitionists, but the prohibitionists were calling for no drink whatsoever. Let's get rid of demon rum and so forth and so on. And if we don't have any alcohol whatsoever, then we won't have any drunkenness. Well, I don't think that that's the right answer either. I do think that there should be limits. I think by and large, the new stadiums are doing a much better job of being able to monitor not only everyday security, not only the security out in the parking lot, but monitor alcohol sales and monitor the type of fan that's coming in and having the bad experience of crossing the line. And I don't know if we have enough time to discuss what's happening in terms of tailgating, but tailgating may have reached its end as we know it, here in San Francisco and in certain other communities, where in the old days, you know, families would go out and become the family Sunday barbecue. And then, oh, by the way, when the barbecue was over, you walk right into the stadium and see the football game. And it was great and it was fun and so forth. But like so many other things in society today, it really did become disjointed and disfigured. And it became an excuse to go out and party and, you know, rev up the music and drink a lot and get yourself ready to go in, and then, as I said, find an opportunity to exhibit the kind of conduct you're not able to exhibit under normal circumstances. So you're going to see tailgating being restricted as it was at Candlestick Park. I believe it was on, what did they do? They opened the park only 4 hours before kickoff, and I believe they discontinued tailgating once the game started, and you could not continue the tailgating once the game was over. So the concept of tailgating that has been so, you know, ardently defended in the past seems to be going by the wayside in view of these security issues.
Well, certainly beer sales is a third rail item as far as talking about this problem. The other one in my mind is the media. And I think that the media has brought an entertainment value, and sometimes it's a negative entertainment value, that showing fights in the stands or just the way they portray certain things, I think adds to the whole element that you're going to find an element of our society that goes to these things and says, hey, how can I get myself on television?
You know, you're absolutely right. And what that just brought to mind is, you know, do you remember we had a rash of streakers?
Right.
And people who'd run out onto the field, sometimes with, sometimes without clothes. And they would be followed by the cameras. When we stopped, when the networks and all of the sports leagues and so forth made the wise decision to not cover this, it seemed to dissipate. And I think there's something to that, that analogy and comparison, and I think you're right. I think that covering these fights and providing them as a secondary form of entertainment value is not a good thing.
Do you think that the media should be more proactive in condemning the type of violence that we've seen around, and maybe the fact that they're going to be, you know, really yelled at by the media and made to be piranhas almost in a sense would be something that would have a positive effect on fan deportment?
I do. I think so. And I think, again, going back to our experience in Cleveland, if you have the kind of camera technology that lets you grab, and I know I'm in San Francisco as I'm speaking to you, Ron, so this may not be a very popular approach from a personal civil rights standpoint, but if you can expose people for their bad conduct, and I honestly think it'd be fine to use these camera shots and say, this is John Doe or Mary Doe, and here he or she is fighting and carrying on and so forth and so on. I mean, if they have even the slightest bit of self-respect or the slightest degree of concern about their view in their community and in society, I think it definitely has an effect, and it might lead to prosecution if it's bad enough.
Yeah, another thing, too, they do the same thing with Johns when it comes to prostitution.
Exactly. And again, that's an excellent example. It's you know, you could almost post them on a bulletin board or post them on some public means of review so that people actually say, I know that guy, he is a jerk, or that guy, I don't know him, but he must be a jerk, or something like that. Because public scrutiny is always very effective.
We have about a minute left. The other thing that bothers me, if you have a fan from a team that's visiting the local stadium and they're wearing the jersey of their favorite team, it bothers me that they get hassled the way that they do.
It's terrible. I mean, we tried everything we could. We tried when we were with the Niners and when we were with Cleveland, of course. We really tried to make sure that didn't happen with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the Baltimore team that would come and visit because of the relationship with the former owner, Art Modell, who moved the team to Baltimore, and it ultimately became the Baltimore Ravens. So we preached. We went through every talk show medium we could find and asked the host to lay it out. We even had some success with the schools, where they would talk about, you know, what are good manners. Good manners are this, that, or if you're at a football game and somebody comes in a Pittsburgh Steelers jersey, you treat them with dignity and respect. I mean, it's terrible that you can't go to a game in a city where your team is playing and you have to feel that you're going to be threatened. It's inexcusable.
Carmen, I want to thank you. This has been a good dialogue, and I hope people will take it to heart when they go to ball games and think about others around them. Thank you, my friend. Take care.
Thank you.
Carmen Policy with us again, former president of the San Francisco 49ers for 7 years during their golden years, the successful years, and former president, CEO, and part owner of the Cleveland Browns. We continue with more of You and Sports Byline.